the 28th of March, 2021. And this will be the closing talk for the winter retreat. I had to step out for a minute after the evening chanting and coming back, seeing everybody meditating. So inspiring. It's not only grateful for the service of the retreat crew, but also just for the practice, the whole community, and it's wonderful to be a part of it. Proud to be a part of this community. And whatever is happening in the mind, that meditation, just that meditation posture and that intention to train and then intention to meditate is very important. And so the life of the Buddha was the theme of the winter retreat, and we didn't quite get to the end of it, but Lungpa was reading from the Mahaparinibbana Sutta. It's a very important sutta. A lot of good principles of Dhamma contained in there. And despite the living in modern times and the kind of technology and globalization that we have these days, we're able to live surprisingly close to the way they lived in the time of the Buddha. And many of the monks, the Buddha himself, they were very well supported, especially later on. Once the Buddha gained that widespread reputation, and so if we have that willingness to train, and with that willingness to train, then we can, any of us can live like in the time of the Buddha and train in that way. There's nothing stopping us from that. All we need is sila, sila samadhi panya. There's something the Buddha, one of the Buddha's utterances from later on, that I don't think it came up in the Bhikkhu Nyanamoli readings, but that the Buddha is saying that as long as people follow and train according to the Noble Eightfold Path, the world will not be devoid of arhats. Yeah. So that's quite inspiring. Also, there's some springtime energy bursting out of the mountainsides. So there's flowers, wildflowers, and the birds in the morning, the doves. There's the doves, you can hear them in the morning now. Somehow a very peaceful call when the doves are calling in the morning. So as time goes on, then how do we keep practicing? What is it that keeps us on the path? So just something we can ask ourselves. And the whole past year with coronavirus happening and the world just changing a lot, and but in samsara, in the big scheme of things, it's just a blip on the screen, and whatever happens, we can take refuge in awareness, in the knowing, in mindfulness, so in our own practice, and nobody and no thing externally can really truly help us. These things only, like the Buddha, only pointing the way to people, leading them back to themselves, back to awareness. So nobody externally can really truly help us or even truly harm us. You know, we can only help or harm ourselves. Yeah. So we get empowered with that reflection. That's an empowering reflection. We empower ourselves. We can either help ourselves or harm ourselves. It's really up to us. It's only an illusion that it's happening. It's being imposed on us from the outside. It's only an illusion that help is being imposed on us or harm is being imposed on us. But it's how we react, how we relate. So that's the kamma, that's the intentionality, that the just the key of the Buddha's teachings. It's just so central. But then we cultivate gratitude because we have that acknowledgement. The people who point us back to ourselves and remind us to train, help us to train, that can be what keeps us from really drifting too far. But ultimately, it's up to ourselves. That's the atta hi atano nato. So there's no refuge other than ourselves. No refuge apart from ourselves. And when we're practicing, there's this idea of spirituality. What does it mean to be spiritual or to have spirituality in our lives? So this is a big deal. Now people are starving for some sort of spirituality. The seeing that money, wealth, material things only take us so far. They give us perhaps a modicum of happiness, but they only take us so far, and it feels that it's superficial and not really getting to the essence, not really getting to the source. So there's that sense of lack and a hunger for something else, for the spiritual. There's a hunger for the spiritual, seeing that part of the heart can see that sensuality only goes so far. And then there's the spiritual. So what do we mean by the spiritual? So there's these ideas of the worldly feelings and spiritual feelings. And so the worldly feelings being the worldly, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral feeling. Then there's the spiritual or the unworldly, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral feelings. And so a worldly pleasant feeling being just sensual happiness, sensual gratification. Worldly unpleasant feeling being a feeling of pain. It could be physical, mental, that feeling of upset or not getting what we want, frustrated desire. That could be a worldly unpleasant feeling or just a worldly neutral feeling, just neither pleasant nor unpleasant. And then there's the spiritual pleasant feeling. That's the pleasant feelings that come about through relinquishment, letting go, renunciation. Also, the Buddha talks about the bliss of blamelessness, so the bliss of sila, long-term sila. One reflects on one's own conduct. There's this a bliss that is blameless comes about upon that reflection. So that's what we call like a niramisa sukha, the spiritual pleasant feeling or unworldly pleasant feeling. And then there's also the spiritual dukkha, the spiritual unpleasant feeling. And that's feelings of going against craving. There might be some dukkha involved in that, or calling into question the defilements, not following along with them. There's a sense of pressure, there's a sense of unpleasantness that might come about due to the training. That reflection that if I follow these particular things, they'll lead to my harm and detriment for a long time. And so that can be the spiritual unpleasant feeling. And then there's the spiritual neither pleasant nor unpleasant, but that's the equanimity abiding in mindfulness and clear comprehension, that clear awareness. So it's equanimity, but also like a deep tranquility, serenity. So that's the difference between the worldly feelings and the spiritual feelings. And of course, the Buddha pointing to the benefits of cultivating and giving attention to those spiritual feelings that can arise in the course of the practice. And also they're related because... But the spiritual happiness is much more stable and firm. And then looking at some of the subtleties of the Buddha's teaching, some things that the Buddha would teach over and over again in the suttas, but then we practice for a long time and maybe it just seems like an ordinary teaching, but it hasn't really touched us, hasn't really hit us in a very deep way. So for example, these teachings on generosity, so this is why did the Buddha formulate, one formulation of the path is dana, sila, bhavana. So dana as the beginning of the path. And that particular teaching, it cuts right through that idea of what can I get from this situation? How is this going to benefit my practice? You know, that just cuts right through that whole idea of doing my duties to get them out of the way so I can go and meditate. Doing my duties so I can get them out of the way. Doing what I have to do. Getting that out of the way so that I can have enough time to meditate, and then that's practice. So, but with dana, the Buddha's highlighting that sense of getting to the point where one is giving with an open hand, giving without holding back, giving the best, giving with our heart. So that sense of putting our heart into an activity, that's dana. So whether it's cooking a meal for the community or giving attention to somebody, we're putting our heart into that activity, and then that's dana. And then let's look at when things are done that way. Then when we put our heart into the activity that we're doing, whether it's some act of generosity or some service or whatever, then that's dana. And then when we go to meditate, then that's also dana. That's what we call the patipati puja. So that's also dana. And then the heart just sings in the meditation when we've already cultivated that beforehand. And let's look at the flip side of that. So if we go about some of our duties where we aren't really putting our heart into the activity because we're just thinking about getting it done so we can get on to what we really want to be doing, i.e. meditating, it's inevitable that then when we do go and meditate, there's going to be that same mental factor there, and the heart isn't going to sing in the same way as when the dana was there. So that's a very important point that it's kind of hard to see, but look at what the Buddha's pointing at, you know, giving the best, giving with an open hand, you know, putting one's heart into the giving, and then that goes straight into the meditation, whether we're doing the sitting or the walking meditation or we're that becomes dana as well. So that's a profound aspect of how to really build a strong foundation for the path. It's kind of a interesting paradox in that with dana, so those of us who are very serious about the practice, we might think, well, I got to get back to my kuti and meditate as soon as possible, and that's a good intention. And so we might just try to do our duties quickly, not really put our heart into them, try to get it done as quickly as possible, get back, and we don't gain as much benefit in that way. So there's that sense of perhaps stress or difficulty in trying to get the duties out of the way. And then there's the meditation. It might be okay, or what it'll be what it is. But then juxtaposition that with putting one's heart into the activity, say washing dishes, for example, doing it well, doing it mindfully, putting one's heart into it. There's a sense of joy that can come up, so you're already getting the benefit. It's not stressful because you're not thinking like, how much longer are these damn dishes going to take and get back to my kuti, meditate. So you're already receiving the benefit of the dana by putting your heart into the activity. We put our heart into the activity, it's peaceful, it's enjoyable, it gets done well. And then the heart is already in that state. We get back and it's not different. We sit down, it's just a change of postures. We walk, it's just a change of postures. We reflect on having done a good job, having put our heart into the activity, then we, when we're alone, then we can meditate, we can do what we will, it'll be good. So that's how we really get on with things. That's what carries us through the practice. And it's just ordinary, but that's how it builds. That sense of dana, then it builds on itself. Then the sila and the bhavana aspect, it just comes naturally. And it just builds up in that way. And we're just living each day with awareness and with that sense of dana, and that's really important. As time goes on, we start to receive the fruits of that wholesome intention. When we start to receive the fruits, and the mind may be distracted sometimes or even quite a bit, but there's that deep inner happiness which then carries us. Then you get the katanyu katawedi, the gratitude, because the practice is working. Something that really strikes me from some of these teachings that were read over the past few weeks were that the Buddha is talking about, he knows one of the powers of the Tathagata, that he knows the possible and the impossible. And he says, like, one who someone would not be able to rightly say that the Tathagata, having taught the Noble Eightfold Path, if one practices according to that teaching, that they wouldn't achieve liberation. So one can't say that. So if one's actually practicing according to the teaching, according to the path, that's the path to liberation. But then, so if we're not getting it, we can't blame it on the teaching. We can't blame it on the Buddha. But there has to be an aspect that we haven't understood yet. There has to be an aspect we haven't seen clearly yet. That's the contemplation. That's what we call the contemplative life, where we live with that openness and that contemplation. And that openness is super important as well. So that openness being a willingness to adjust ourselves, or a willingness to shift our views, our willingness to just be open. When we have that openness, then we can see things in a different way. So it's not that we, and Lungpo, I think, alluded to this last night, that we don't, it's not just some sort of knowledge that we collect, but it's more of a way of relating, of responding. That's the punya, skillful response. And that comes from the mindfulness, the sati, that sense of sati sampajanya, the clear knowing and awareness, that sense of carefulness that we cultivate in the monastery. So I don't have that much to say this evening, but I just want to express gratitude to the winter retreat crew and also to the community for the practice. And I apologize, I haven't been as available as I wanted to be this retreat. I have my own difficulties I had to go through, and have come out the other end. So having my own dukkha to look at, and haven't been able to lead as much qigong or be as available as I wanted to be. But hopefully, people have been able to practice on their own and gain the benefit from that. And just want to say anumodana to everybody, and I'll leave it there for this evening.
Namaste. Sadhu, sadhu.